Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Mean Green Nation podcast. It's a bright and sunny day here at Mean Green Nation headquarters, and not only because of the weather, but because North Texas got a win over the other team in green, the Marshall's Thundering Herd. It's the kind of win that you can feel good about. They dominated on defense, big plays on offense. You know, you can vine it. It's very vineable. That's good. The offense showed signs of being the kind of team that we want to see, explosive, but with the ability to grind out drives. There was some of that consistency that Seth Luttrell talked about, although there were some things to improve, and we'll talk about that in a second. The defense, also explosive, in that they got into the backfield, made Marshall go backwards generally. I think for a while there, Marshall was reducing their yards per play output, and that's something you always want to see. And then, of course, the Eric Jenkins pick six that was on its way. You felt it coming. I felt it coming the whole night. So I think the best way, as always, to break this down is to go through the units, you know, separately. So let's start with offense. Last week, this offense threw for 300 yards, and everybody was okay with that if you just looked at the stats. But the problem with that game, and I know I'm talking about the Middle Tennessee game here, but we didn't do a podcast post that game, so let's kind of address it here. Mason Fine and the offense looked inconsistent. They couldn't run the ball, and I think subsequently head coach Seth Luttrell said that we have to run for 250 yards a game in order to win. I don't know where he said that. The guys on the broadcast mentioned that. But, I mean, you can kind of see that. I translate that as we need to get Jeff Wilson the ball, and we need to get him going. We need to block better up front. And, you know, 90% of this offense is up front. It's the five dudes up front that don't get a whole lot of love, but are super important. Football is still a physical game. And, you know, 5/11 of the offense is devoted to, you know, guys blocking. So, they played better today. The five guys up front, there's still too many sacks. I think Mason Fine was sacked six times, which is two more than the season averages, which is like 4.2 per game that were given up. So obviously that's not great, and you can't give them an A+ for that. But they did open up some lanes, just enough lanes for Jeffrey Wilson to, you know, burst through, including that 72-yard run that everybody's going to remember for a long time. And, I mean, really, that's all you can ask of them at this point. We don't need them to just be Alabama and open up giant running lanes or anything like that. We don't really need that. We need just enough. We need just enough to be successful. We need them to buy Mason Fine enough time to get the ball off so he can throw a pass to Thaddeus Thompson, who has been pretty clutch. I think he was targeted 10 times, only completed 5, but, I mean, again, given the constraints and the limitations of this offense at present, all the things, youth, inexperience, talent, you know, coaching inexperience. That's about all we can reasonably ask for. Mason Fine went today 18 of 28 for 206 yards, a touchdown. His rating was 137. That is pretty solid. That's bus driver type quarterbacking, just by the numbers. On top of that, he added, 14 rushes for 9 yards, and I think, but his longest is 14. I think that was on a draw. The QB draw where he lowered his shoulder again. I made a joke on Twitter saying that, you know, everybody's like, slide, dude. He's like, yeah, I do slide. I just, you know, I slide head first into the dude's chest every time. Coach, you know, what's the problem? I don't understand. I don't know if we're going to be able to control that dude. I don't know if we're going to get him to slide like we need him to slide. Hopefully this run of luck continues where he's not injuring himself. We already played Florida, and, you know, he came away from that game relatively healthy. He's continuing to do that through conference play. We get a bye week. That's good. We get to rest him up. As a contributor to the blog, Greg says, he's taken way too many hits. And I agree. There was a couple of plays where he stood in there, fired a pass, got rocked, and, you know, got back up. And that's great. That's great when he does that. But eventually, you know, one of those guys hitting him is going to break something or strain something. And then we're going to have to turn to Alec Morris, I guess, or somebody else. So that's a concern. Right now, though, he made enough plays. I think a couple of people. You can see the divide in the like demographics of the fan base. Because some people are like, oh, man, look at Mason Fine looking like Johnny Manziel back there. And other people, I think maybe just one person, was like, wow, can you say Fran Tarkenton? Yeah. So, I mean, if you understand, if you know who Fran Tarkenton is, then you're probably on the older side. Unless you're just a super football nerd, like moi. Yeah, you know, just an aside, in case you're wondering where the other person is on this podcast. No, I'm not just muting them. It's just me today, running solo today. Solo Mean Green Nation post-game reaction show. So back to what I was talking about. Mason Fine runs too much, yes, we know that. But he ran effectively, he runs, makes plays, and that's really where we want to deploy him. Where he can extend plays that are breaking down. Because every offense has a play that breaks down a little bit, and you would like a guy that can use his feet to extend a play, buy you some extra time. But you don't want him, you know, you don't want it to be the first option. You draw up a play, say, all right, Mason Fine, just make something happen. That's not a recipe for success. So that's kind of the interpretation I had of Seth Luttrell saying, we need to run for 250 yards a game. By the way, 252 yards was the final tally. 54 attempts, 252 yards, 3 touchdowns, 4.7 average. You might have noticed early in the game, when it was still, you know, neck and neck, especially the first half, Jeffrey Wilson was somewhere at like 3.5 yards a carry. Willie Ivory was like at 2.9 or something like that. The line, there was like a shuffle there after the injury to Creighton Barr. I didn't really see it because, again, I was watching on over-the-air TV. Thanks a lot, San Antonio broadcast people, Spectrum, whatever it is. So I had to buy an antenna, and I set it up. I had to watch it that way. So no DVR. Yeah, I was like back in 2000 for a second. So there was some shuffling in the line, and some more watchful people tell me that Jordan Murray made the switch to right guard, and that was the catalyst for some of these bigger explosive runs. Also, you can see on the highlight of Jeffrey Wilson, I think Marshall was just over pursuing on a couple of them. I think that was an outside zone that he was running there, like we usually do. Usually they kind of get stuffed, and everybody's like, why are they trying to run the outside when they run up inside? Well, Jeff Wilson planted his foot, made a cut as you're taught to do, exploded up the middle, and ran for 72 yards untouched. I think the linebacker tried to get to the edge, and once he was out of position, he got caught by the left guard, who blocked him just enough to allow Jeffrey Wilson to explode through the line, and he was gone. He was pretty much gone at 3 yards past the line of scrimmage, and I tweeted that. I tweeted gone before he was gone because he was that gone. So the run game was successful, but it was largely Jeffrey Wilson, and that's not really a bad thing. He's our best player. I've been saying this. 188 yards of our 252, two scores, including that 72-yarder. He averaged 7.2 yards a carry. If you do the math, he ran for 25 carries, 116 yards, and what is that, like 4.5 yards a carry on runs other than that large, that long run. So pretty solid. You know, some coaching points. I think he's going to definitely get coached up about that fumble right at the end of the half, the first half. Some people are like, well, what are we trying to be too aggressive? What are we doing? And others are like me. I fall into the latter camp that say, let's try to score. Offense, try to score. This offense is supposed to be aggressive. That's a philosophy that you want to teach, impart upon the kids here. And I think you do that by demonstrating that. You don't all of a sudden get conservative. If you're going to say we're going to go score, then go score. Demonstrate this. So I'm fine with the call. I'm less okay with the execution. Gotta hold the ball better there, Jeffrey. And I think he had fumble problems a couple years ago. And then last year, I think that was kind of an issue with him. If you had any question marks about Jeffrey Wilson, it's the fumbles and the injury stuff. And, you know, he kind of got shaken up in this game. Seth Luttrell said in the post game that he can make it back, so that's good to know. He was well on his way to probably a 200-yard game. As it was, I think this 188-yard game is his career high here. And yeah, it's his career high. It's good stuff, guys. That's 2 years Jeffrey Wilson has dominated Marshall's run game, run defense. Last year, 138. This year, 188. That's pretty good. The difference, the real difference this season, and I was looking at some of the stats. Like our yards per play in this game was like 5.6. You kind of want that higher, maybe somewhere around 6. But it's not bad. I think the totals, the cumulatives are good. Against SMU, we were over 400, but then we got sacked like to end of the game. So if you want to asterisk that and call that a 400-yard game, I think we've reached 400 four out of six games. And that's not bad. That's not bad at all. I think we only did it once last season. Now, again, yards per play last season and this season are very similar. So then you're like, well, is this really and truly offensive improvement, Seth? Yes, because they're scoring a full 10 points more per game. I think it is. It's like 10.2 points per game more. Last season, yes, we averaged 15.3 points per game. And prior to that, our worst season was 20. I think it was 2 years ago. It was 20 points a game. So here we are back up there at a decent number. 25 points a game is a decent number. You can win football games like that. In Conference USA and in 2016 college football, that is, you know, you're not going to say it's a guaranteed win. 25 points a game is what teams get at the half nowadays. Still, you know, this is with that shutout in there. It's pretty good. We're scoring more. Look at Jeffrey Wilson. He has 9 touchdowns. I think he's like third in the conference or tied for the conference lead. I forget the exact number. But that it's not really relevant where he ranks nationally because he has 9 touchdowns and he had 1 last season. Our best player last season, only 1 touchdown. Best player this season, 9 touchdowns. Big difference. That's why we're averaging more points a game. Football's a simple game. I'm getting, I got a question, live question on the show, even though it's not really live. Is there a difference in points per game in the first half, in our first half? First half scoring rate versus last year's first half scoring rate. I don't know that answer. It's a good thing to look up. What would that tell us? I mean, I don't know. Basically, are we in the game to start the game more than we once were? Yeah, kind of. I mean, here's the thing. Is that Seth Mitchell has said that this offense needs to be more consistent, and that means a lot of things. It needs to be more consistent from play to play, because often you'll see a really good completion, a really good play, and you're like, wow, look at that. This is a pretty explosive offense. And then the very next play, a sack, and it looks like our offensive line just didn't even know what the play was. So from play to play, from drive to drive, I think last game against Middle Tennessee, 18-play drive, you know, pretty solid, pretty consistent touchdown. Next few drives were pretty terrible. And there was a couple 3-and-outs in there. In this game, same kind of deal. After the explosive touchdown play, another 3-and-out. It's hit or miss. It's inconsistent. And then you can even say half to half or quarter to quarter. A couple weeks ago against Rice, down 17-0. The offense looked very terrible. And then all of a sudden, a couple of scoring drives. Helped by a miracle fade route to Kieran Rutherford, and then the long pass to Kenny Byers. Those things will improve, I think. I'm a believer that inconsistency is a telltale mark of a young team, and some people disagree with me there. But I think the onus is on them to prove their point. Every young team that I've ever seen play is really inconsistent like that, and we'll see improvement as the season goes along. That's what we're looking for. Has it improved? I think the answer has been yes. Mason Fine looks even more comfortable than he did. I mean, one of the reasons that he is starting is because he's more comfortable in this offense than Alec Morris. And if you're going to devote a season to a player's improvement, it might as well be the one with more upside. And, you know, unfortunately, Alec Morris is a senior. So after the season, he's done. So we can only get whatever point he was starting at to whatever point he ends at. And, you know, there's no point in using up a season for Alec Morris when the chances of this team competing for a conference title are very slim. And I'll get to the chances later because I think there's some implications there. Also, I think unofficial producer of the show said that I should hashtag this MGN Party of One. That's a good one. Today's Mean Green Nation is brought to you by the Deranged Penguin Podcast. I recommend you listen. All right, so what else? What else about the offense? Hey, Thaddeus Thompson is our go-to guy. You know, he's the blanket, the security blanket receiver for the Oklahoma kid out here for the fine dozer. I'm really glad to see that dude come into his own. I mean, he's not putting up amazing stats. He's not blowing up off the page. You know, it's not like, you know, 10 catches, 250 yards or something like that. 5 catches, 68 yards is what some receivers get in the first half in other offenses. But in this offense, he is invaluable, and he's reliable, and that's huge. Unfortunately, dude's a senior, but it's good to see him, you know, make plays. I think he was brought in by Mike Canales basically to do this here. And, you know, obviously everybody remembers last season's quarterback situation. And, I mean, it was basically a throwaway season for Thaddeus Thompson. So it's good to see him come out here and, you know, be the leading receiver pretty much every game. One note, did you notice that Tiguri did not catch a pass? Kenny Byers is coming to his own. He's really getting into that role. I think they like him going across the middle. He's quick. And he has an advantage over, you know, the safeties and guys, some of the guys are putting on him. And he's beating them. He's beating them with little shimmy shakes going across the middle. And I think a couple times they try to get him on a couple crossing routes, a little H cross. I like that. How about Tyler Wilson coming up with a touchdown? Future. He's speedy. We like his ability to get deep. I think that when he came on, like a, it was like a dig. It's basically like a post route. He had two guys on him. He jumped up there, made a catch. A couple notes about that touchdown pass. Mason Fyatt had lots of time, and he delivered a strike. Hey, what do you know? Give the guy time, and he can slice him up. And then Tyler Wilson made a great catch. He jumped up there, caught the pass. He was targeted 3 times, caught 2, only 17 yards receiving, but that touchdown. That's good. Hey, and an appearance by Kelvin Smith also, who's underused, man. He really is underused. Okay, moving on from the offense. I guess there's not really a whole lot else we can discuss here. Again, I mean, you watch the game, you know, some flirts. Stirrups, and I said that on purpose because that's what the offense seems like to me. Lots of time in possession. Really ran the ball well. 252 yards rushing, 206 yards passing. 23 first downs, 8 of 17 on third down, which is goodish. It's not greatish. And then, well, the conversion. I was going to save this for the special team discussion because apparently Eric Kina made his own call. He decided he was going to do that rugby style punt. He looked over, saw a gaping hole, and decided to rush for, well, he didn't decide to rush for 18. He ran for all he could get on 4th and 8, converted, and it really turned the tide there. You know, I don't know how much of a believer you are in momentum, and you know, I think if you redefine momentum as like confidence and belief, then it makes a little bit more sense. Because, you know, you're like, momentum. You're like, how if they had all the momentum, how was this dude able to score, you know, a 72-yard run or something like that? Well, it's more like if you believe the guys on the team believe that they can win or they have confidence in themselves, then they just play differently. And then, you know, they play more confidently and they make more plays. And so that's how you can see momentum. I think that's the only way I can accept the concept there. And, I mean, and it's easy to think that when you remember that so much of human activity is determined by, you know, a person's belief in themselves or belief in, you know, systems or whatever. If you don't believe it, you can't do it. And if you do believe it, then, you know, it's possible you could. So, at that point, North Texas, it was tied. I think it was 14-14. Drive stalled. Again, drive stalled. It was like a offense was moving, then a sack. Got him behind the chains. Offense couldn't convert in the 3 downs. 4th and 8. Eric Kina decides to run. He takes off running for 18 yards, converts, gets hit maybe a little late. And the Conference USA refs, who were pretty terrible all game, missing various holding calls. I think I saw a targeting call, too. Didn't really control the game. Eric Kina gets up, kind of taunts some dude in the sideline, and he gets flagged. There was also some shoving and things in there. If I'm the ref, maybe I throw a flag on both teams for everything that went on there, but they decided just to penalize Eric Kina. Now, so he gained 18 yards, and then they lose 15 yards on the penalty, but they got the first down. And I think that was a drive they went down, and Tyler Wilson got the touchdown. I think, yes. So, I mean, if you want to draw, the cliche columnist, what was the turning point of the game? Well, that was it. Because at that point, North Texas was tied. If they stayed tied, maybe the defense continues to do its job. Maybe this, maybe that. But at that point, to get a second chance at life, go down and score a touchdown, and be up 7 points, especially after that kickoff return. That kind of sucked the air out of the stadium a little bit after two great defensive stops at the end of the half. I'm getting ahead of myself here, but my point is that was a huge, huge turning point. And Marshall ended up going down and scoring. Now, I don't like to play what if, but let's say North Texas punts. Marshall, still drives down, and they go up 21-14. It's a different game. Maybe North Texas still comes out with the win. Maybe they don't. Maybe guys start pressing. It's just a different game to play ahead, from ahead, on defense and offense, than it is to play from behind. And so I'm going to go ahead and say that was a very huge play of the game. All right, let's talk about some defense. Was that not amazing? Was that amazing to see? I think official wife of Mean Green Nation said it's what should I say? Something like, it's real fun to see us score so many points as Eric Jenkins danced into the end zone after intercepting the ball and then returning all the way. By the way, Eric Jenkins apparently texted his friend and predicted this. I saw somebody tweet that. Anyway, I mean, if I'm a cornerback, I'm pretty much gonna say that the whole game. Three pick sixes for me today, guys. Y'all watched the game. So the defense played well. There was a lot of, I think it was a 5 sacks on Chase Litton. They harassed them all game. They got in the backfield, and caused havoc. I think the official stat term now is havoc. Let's see, Courtney Finney. Had 7 tackles. He was pretty good. He was good in pass coverage. That was an underrated aspect of his game. I think what Marshall started doing, once they couldn't get vertical on these guys, they started getting them going east-west, horizontally. They had some success going that way. Also, North Texas was, especially in the second half, playing off on the edges, and they were finding some underneath passes there. But, they weren't able to convert, and they did it one too many times, especially in that last drive. Once it was pretty much all decided, Eric Jenkins sat on that route and picked it off and turned all the way. That's kind of how that worked. Was it 9 tackles for loss? That's an indicator. Was it Josh Wheeler got back there? Malik DeLonga had a pretty big play, if I remember the situation. It was in that the defense had 2 stops. One right at the end of the half that forced a missed field goal. I mean, they didn't force it, but Marshall missed a field goal there. And then immediately after the turnover, short field, they stopped them again. Another missed field goal. Those are 2 huge stops there because they allow Marshall to get a little closer. Maybe those field goals are a little bit easier. Obviously, they allow touchdowns. It's pretty terrible there, too. Ajayi had a tackle for loss. McLean, Roberts, Brandon Garner had 3 tackles for losses. James Gray even got in on action. Again, it's indicative of the style of this defense that we wanted to play. If you are a longtime listener or maybe a reader of Mean Green Nation, you know that we've been talking about this defense as an attacking one, one that likes to get in the backfield, create different looks up front, make it difficult to block easily. and bringing pressure with different guys. Whereas the more effective 2013 John Sclodany defense was more of a conservative one that relied on the front four to get pressure on the quarterback. And they did. They did it successfully. And you can see when that works, it works well. And probably even better because you're only rushing four. This kind of hybrid 3-3-5 or 8-3 defense, whatever you want to call it, is kind of like swinging for the fences. I tweeted a link to a Football City Hall article, which is pretty good. It was, you know, it's kind of it was like a summary of other things that are written about this kind of defense. But it's good if you're just kind of trying to get introduced to it. It's about West Virginia's version of it, and it's basically similar. Any 3-3-5 defense relies on unpredictability and aggressiveness, and you kind of have to because you only have three down linemen. And sometimes those dudes are not very big, and you're, you know, moving a lot of guys around. When it doesn't work, it looks awful, as any defense does. And a lot of times, you know, guys are out of position, the run fits aren't right, guys are rushing into the backfield, miss a tackle, and next thing you know, there's a huge gap there in the defense. And other ways it breaks down, like it did against SMU. Where Matt Davis was able to dance around some of the tackles, where they had him in his grasp. Guys had Matt Davis tackled or right near tackled. He escaped and then chucked it up for a touchdown or a big play or just ran or something like that. That's when it looks bad. I think there was also a big run by one of the SMU running backs. I forget his name now. That's what it looks like when it looks bad. What does it look like when it looks good? Like this. Or like even last week when North Texas was able to stifle a very good Middle Tennessee offense, or the week previous when they played Rice and they were able to hold Rice to a very very respectable yards per play totals, considering that they allowed 100 plays against them. It gets into the backfield, gets tackles, forces third and longs, and makes it easier to play defense. Offenses nowadays do a really good job of spreading you out and making you declare what you're going to do. You know, you have guys all spread across the field, and then it's really hard to hide or disguise coverages that way. And so it makes it easier to pick on a guy and do what they want. And they, you know, if they have more athletes and they can win those one-on-one battles, often they do, and that's why we see everybody score basketball scores out here. So if you manage to basically take a gamble and get a tackle for loss, get a sack early in the down schedule, then it makes it easier for the defense. Now the offense has to declare what they are going to do. And, you know, you dictate to them. And it's simple, again, but football is a simple game. And that's what North Texas was able to do. Sack Chase Litton, force him in third and longs. And then they could bring the house at him. And, you know, he could just dump it off, but then, you know, the other part is that guys come up, fly up, and make a tackle. Short of the sticks, they have the punt. Or he can try to max protect, and they can look downfield and try to get a, you know, try to hope for something that way. That was kind of the Matt Davis version, the SMU version. They were successful that way, just chucking it up to their future NFL receiver and letting them make a play. If you're Marshall and maybe you don't have that kind of guy, you get sacked. And that's what happened. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Our attacking North Texas defense, as expected, at least over here at Mean Green Nation. I expected them to be good. I expected them to wreak havoc. I was concerned they'd give up more big plays, but guess what? They haven't. They only allowed 14 offensive plays against a Marshall team that came in relatively explosive. The only game that they didn't play well in offensively, like really well, then was Louisville. Like, I think Louisville held them to fewer yards per play, but I mean, Louisville is a different breed of team out here. So Marshall's not as good. They're not the Rakeem Cato Marshall. They're not that good, and that's one of the reasons I picked them before the season as like a win here for North Texas. Still, they are a good team. Doc Holliday is a good coach. They have good players, and you know, they're capable of scoring. This is the kind of game that we would have played well in defensively well-ish. You know, I guess it's all relative. And we would have lost, much like last season when we did exactly that, lost 30-13. We had some brief moments. I think Marshall, funny enough, Marshall last season had to fake a punt to kind of pull away from a North Texas team that was kind of creeping back into the game with Jeffrey Wilson. This time we returned the favor. Basically the same thing, just flipped it. It's a good win. I saw some people saying, like, wow, this is, you know, perennial power. It's a huge win for North Texas. Marshall's not that good, and they're 1-4 now. So it's impressive, but not so impressive. It's going, like, when they play Western Kentucky, Southern Miss, or Louisiana Tech, those would be even more impressive wins because those teams have played well this season. Those teams have won, and those teams have offenses that can really do some damage. They will really challenge what North Texas has here and what they've displayed. You can even make a case that North Texas defense hasn't played the greatest competition available. Rice is mediocre to bad on offense. Marshall's probably the best team. I mean, even Florida is more talented than they are good at executing offensively. So, all that said, I'm confident. I think this team, this defense, can make plays against Army, UTSA. Those are the ones coming up. And then the real question mark will be Western Kentucky. God, I need more coffee. Let me take another sip of coffee right quick. Coffee 10 is good. Right. So, again, Western Kentucky's, they had a shootout with Louisiana Tech on Thursday night, 55-52. One, I don't know that North Texas's offense can, you know, create 52 points, 50 points. They have some trouble creating 38 points, right? So I don't know if we can get into shootout with those teams. But we might not necessarily need that. We just need some really good plays by the defense. Basically it. One of the things coming to this game that I asked for in the Mean Green Nation Slack, and I was just saying, you know what I'd like to see from this defense? They've done a really good job of bending but not breaking and, you know, kind of being tough to score on. I'd like to see them create more turnovers for scores. And we saw that here, and this was kind of like, you know, icing on the cake, the cherry on top, whatever, you know, you want to choose as a metaphor there. I'd like to see that more early in the game, earlier in the game. We're getting to the quarterback, so now you'd like to see some sack fumbles. We're getting interceptions, and you'd like to see those taken all the way back. I mean, look, they are turnovers are turnovers, and you're happy to get them all the time. But you'd like to see the defense help out the offense, like that 2013 defense did. If you remember, that defense could score. It created turnovers and created short fields and would score. That's the next evolution here. That's what we want to see. And it's funny that we're comparing this team, this 2016 version that supposedly has this new wide-open offense, to that 2013 team because they're very similar. It's funny. That one was a run-first team that played really great defense. This is a really good defense that has an offense that can only run first, that should run first. There you go. It's all semantics anyway. So special teams, let's talk about that a little bit. Eric Kina made the one play, the pretty good play, the conversion there. So we'll give him that. He's on a special team. John Shalacy missed a tackle, allowed Keon Davis from Marshall to score a touchdown. Some folks are saying, well, you know, that was bad kickoff coverage. I saw more than one person say this. I don't know that I call that just completely bad special teams coverage, considering the fact that most everyone was in their lane. You could maybe say that you'd like to see more people get off their blocks, but Shalacy got off his block. He was in position to make the tackle. I think you say, hey, you got to make that tackle. I mean, football's a team game, and you know, you need the guy in position to make a play, to make the play. He was there. He missed a tackle. And I think what's worse, he didn't even slow him up. He just kind of bounced off of him. And so Keon Davis was able to run right where John Salacia came from. And, you know, that's where he took it to the house. And very slowly. So maybe you say, well, come on, guys. You got to, you know, chase that dude down or something. But it was not like everybody just did their own thing. There were, like, huge gaps or, you know, anything like that. It wasn't, like, blown coverage. It was just a blown tackle. And sometimes it happens. John's been really good this season. He's made some pretty incredible special teams tackles, so we can't even hate on that dude. Overall, this is not the greatest night. There's a missed field goal also for the special teams. I think special teams coach Tommy Perry is going to have a lot to say during this week and then the bye week leading up to the Army game. Got to clean that up. Especially, again, the offense is not... It's good-ish, but it's not... It's not where we expect it to be, and so you can't be just giving up points on the special teams. You'd like to score more on special teams. And with that, let's move on to the coaching staff. If it is true that Seth Luttrell said, let's run the ball more, we need to focus on his run game, and then they come out and run for 252 yards, then you can, you know, you can credit him if that was indeed the game plan. Now, I figured that should have been the game plan the whole time, right? Our best player is Jeff Wilson. I don't think there's a question about that. I don't think there was a question about that coming into the season, into this game. And so if the coach is saying, let's give the ball to our best player, I don't know how much credit you can give him for that, but maybe we should, because some coaches don't even do that. They get too clever, and they give the ball to somebody else. This should be the game plan going this season. Run the ball with Jeffrey Wilson, and when they stack the box or they overload it, then we need to make plays on the outside. Some teams will just basically set it up that way to begin with and force Mason Fine to make a play. Look at Middle Tennessee. That's what they did. And so it's important for the pass game to improve in that respect and not hurt themselves, not get sacked, et cetera, et cetera. And we've seen some improvements from the coaching staff in that respect. They've shuffled the offensive line pieces just enough to be effective at times. Some of the problems there are that there are not a whole lot of options. You know, they can't reach deep into the depth chart because it's very shallow as it is right now. Jordan Murray got pulled from left tackle. He got moved to right guard because of injury. He was useful there, he was effective there, but you see the problem there. You're pulling a guy for poor performance over here and moving him over there and saying, you know, you have limited options, is my point. Luttrell mentioned that the offensive line coach, is it Davis, Brad Davis, I think his name is, I forget, I might be wrong on that one, don't tweet at me, that he's done a hell of a job. Again, we'll see, this is a long-term project here. Hopefully Seth Luttrell is going to have to build this team, build this roster, build the offensive line especially, over time. And somebody pointed out to me that I think we have a lot of recruits, so like the offensive line, we have a lot of offers out to a lot of guys there, including one or two JUCO guys that can come in and play immediately. I thought it was interesting. I was listening to the Washington State press conference during the week with Mike Leach, and somebody asked him about the offensive line, and Mike Leach used to be an offensive line coach when he first started coaching, so he says he always takes an interest in it. That's the first thing that he watches, you know, following practice. He watches the film, the drills and things to do. He's an offensive line coach at heart, and that's good because if you're an offensive coach, then you should care about the offensive line. As I said, the most important group on the field. And he said they like to carry something like 21 offensive linemen on their roster. And I think we have something like 12. And, practically speaking, we maybe have 8 or something like that, maybe 7, depending on the injury. And so you can see the problem here. There's, you know, again, going back to the same thing. There's a limited we have limited tools to do this job here. And so you have to keep that in mind when you're criticizing Seth Luttrell, Graham Harrell, the other position coaches and things. next season, the season after that, you can maybe criticize them differently because, you know, there'll be different circumstances. So just keep that in mind. That's what I say. So when the offensive line is getting blown up, you can't be like, oh, God, well, I thought they were going to improve that or something ridiculous like that, because that's just not smart fandom. Outside of that, I like the plays that Graham Harrell is calling. I think he does a little too much with Mason Fine running the ball, but hey, I mean, it's effective. It's useful at times. I'd really like to see more of the screen game with Jeffrey Wilson or Willie Ivory. However, I realize that the defenses are expecting that. They know that those guys are the best playmakers on the team at this point, at least the most accomplished players. And so they're targeting those guys. We really need more of the Kenny Byers catch and run. This one he had, was it 34-yard run? We really need more of that, 72-yard run he had recently. We need a couple of some of these other guys to take some of these short passes and turn them into long passes. And that means more Thaddeus Thompson, Tyler Wilson making a catch, turning up field, making a play. That's how you do those things. And we'll see. I think those things would develop. We've already seen development from Tyler Wilson. We've already seen Willie Robinson can make a play like that. I really like to see more Tigori, maybe get him into different positions, maybe move him inside. I don't know, something. I think he's fallen lower on the depth chart out there. And even when he's in, I think last week he had 100 yards or something like that. He hasn't been that much of a standout. At least not to the level that we expected him to be. And so, you know, there are definitely opportunities for guys to make plays. And the receiver position is another one of those positions that looks like it's deep-ish. If you look at the roster, you're like, look at all these dudes. But it's not so much. We're seeing Turner Smiley getting back out there, making more appearances. And he's a guy that, you know, he has some ability to catch and run, to make a play. So maybe we'll see more of that. We'll see. It's a work in progress, though. And we're talking about the coaches here. I like that they're putting them in position. I like that they're giving guys opportunities. And they said this before, that you need everybody. You need, you know, with the speed that they run the offense, you need guys to contribute. More than one guy. It can't just be the one dude that catches all the passes. It's going to be everybody. So I like that they do that. I think that's the right way to play football, the right way to play most sports outside of the individual sports, probably. You need everybody to contribute. I like that. I like that Graham Harrell is changing up the offense a little bit. You'll see that he'll have another dude in the back, like the H-back, the fullback back there, to help pass protect a little bit more. He's not putting Mason Fine in position to get murdered back there all the time. You know, they're tailoring the offense toward the guys that are playing, and that's good. I like the game that he called. A lot of good runs, focusing on their best players. It was a good coached, a well-coached game. Definitely by Mike Eckler. He mixed it up. He brought the blitzes at the right time. And some of that is just because they're effective, right? I mean, you know, whatever play he called, if it wasn't effective, then all of a sudden he looks dumb. That's the nature of the game, I guess. But yeah, I mean, he challenged Marshall's offense. He didn't sit back and let them pick him apart. He was conservative and made them make plays, and they couldn't because he had guys running right up the middle. It was good stuff all the way around. I don't want to get too detailed into that. Also, I don't have the benefit of looking at it again, so I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what happened hours ago. I thought I had another question. No question there. All right, let's play a speculation game right now, and maybe briefly, very briefly, talk about what happened in Conference USA last night. All right, let's play some speculation time. This is one of the benefits of being 2-1 in conference and 3-3 overall, is that you get up, say, oh, well, who are we going to play in a bowl game? Are we playing a bowl game? I'm not going to go that far, but North Texas is 3-3, halfway to a bowl, to bowl eligibility. And not only that, they have the conference division, the Conference USA West, within its sights. basically, North Texas wins out, and they play UTSA and UTEP coming up. UTSA is the next conference game in 3 weeks on the 29th of October, and UTEP is the final game of the season. So those are the two easiest wins. If you look at any advanced stats, I think they put us somewhere to beat UTSA at like 44% or something like that, and then UTEP at like 55. It varies, you know, 10 percentage points depending on the advanced stat flavor du jour. But that's basically it. Those are two most winnable conference games coming up. And then next, Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss, and also Western Kentucky, a murderer's row of Conference USA foes, at least coming into this weekend. Louisiana Tech, I've maintained that they don't look so amazing to me. They are very good. They are clearly one of the best teams in the conference, and they just beat Western Kentucky. Now then, Western Kentucky is really talented. But after that Alabama game, they have not played well. I feel like there's a little bit of letdown. And if you talk to some of the fan base, they are very hyped that they almost beat Vanderbilt, I guess. Whatever. Vanderbilt's not that good. But Conference USA is not very clearly separated within the tiers. I think Western Kentucky, Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech, and Middle Tennessee are the best teams in the conference, at least the most talented. The next tier, Marshall, maybe North Texas, you want to include us in there, is, you know, it's kind of Old Dominion, who played really well. Old Dominion beat up on UTSA, and they beat up on, who else did they play recently? Charlotte. Old Dominion's in there, and then you have, like, the bottom, which is, like, Rice, Charlotte, FAU, FIU. Those are clearly the, UTEP are clearly the worst teams there. But there's not a whole lot of difference between the middle tier and the lower tier. And now, if you took a look at the scores, Southern Miss got destroyed on the road at UTSA, 55-32. And it really felt like one of those games that they didn't come to play. It was early, 11 a.m. The defense allowed 4 touchdowns of 70-plus yards, 2 pass plays of 7 in the 70s range, and then 2 run plays in the 80s range. It was ridiculous, and they weren't helped by the fact that star quarterback Nick Mullins was out for a couple of series, and that really hindered their comeback. But yeah, their defense wasn't going to let them win that game. It was pretty terrible, and very indicative of the way Southern Miss has played, you know, this season. They went down big to Kentucky. They came back and beat them, so everybody felt good about that. They lost to Troy. Troy's a very good team. They beat UTEP, but not very well, only 34-7. You kind of expect a bigger score there. They beat Rice 44-28 again. Allowed 28 to Rice. Rice is not that great. You know, and they have LSU coming up next week. So Southern Miss was more of a letdown by Southern Miss. Again, and I realize if you're like a UTSA fan or something, you're like, dude, you said this twice about UTSA already, about that Arizona State game and now the Southern Miss game. Well, that's the thing, is that UTSA plays pretty well at home. I don't know what it is, just traveling to San Antonio, going to the Dome, throws people off. Maybe it's the timing. Again, this game was at 11 a.m., which is not very usual for a Conference USA team. And then also, it was on the road. And then the UTSA-Arizona State game was on a Friday night. So maybe that has something to do with it. For us, it's concerning because we go to UTSA. And we play them there. So if UTSA has some kind of home field magic where they jump out to 20-point leads, well, we need to be concerned about that because our offense can't really, you know, score in bunches that way, as we've discussed. So still, UTSA is still a winnable game. And maybe that Southern Miss game. Southern Miss comes to Denton the 19th of November. And that one's at 4:30, in case you're wondering. You know, so if Southern Miss doesn't want to play, they don't show up every week, hopefully that game is one of the games they don't show up in. And North Texas can steal a victory. I really do think that's probably right now, I can't even bring myself to say it. I still think the Louisiana Tech game is probably the one that we can steal, but it's looking more likely that like the Southern Miss game is the one. It's at home, it's in Denton, so, you know, maybe. If that's the case, if we win out, we play all the teams ahead of us in conference, and that means Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech. We get a win against those two teams. We're in the driver's seat in this conference division. It could be, ladies and gentlemen, it very well could be that in Seth Luttrell's first season, North Texas in the conference championship game. Wouldn't that be something? And hey, what did they play? Middle Tennessee got revenge. Wouldn't that be something? But that's less important to me. I don't really think that's possible. If you want to, you know, put a percentage on it, it's like 1 in 20 chance of that happening. What is slightly more likely, just the nature of the game here, is a bowl game, and that's kind of weird too, because I think, you know, that is more nationally recognizable, maybe, than who played in the conference USA title game. But whatever. Still, UTSA, UTEP, two of the more likely wins. Next game, we go to Army. That's going to be tough, but it's still possible. It's still winnable. Army just lost to Duke, and they've dropped the game to Buffalo, so it's very possible that they can lose another one. They're not maybe the budding juggernaut that they looked like early in the season when they went 3-0. So some combination of that puts North Texas in a bowl game. Again, in Seth Luttrell's first season with a team that went 1-11 last season. Only the victory over UTSA at home, a miracle victory at home. Army, UTSA, Louisiana Tech, Western Kentucky, Southern Miss, UTEP is the schedule. Again, I think that Louisiana Tech game is the most winnable game of that murderer's row stretch there where we play the three of the teams that are favored to win the conference, that were favored to win the conference coming into the season. So we'll see. It's going to be big. And, you know, it very well could be that we don't win any more games this season. It's very possible considering everything. But even 4 wins, 5 wins, it has to be considered a success. I think lots of people said that. They were like, 3 to 5 wins is probably the ceiling for this team. North Texas is going to have a lot to struggle with. I'm one of the crazy people that predicted 7 wins, but that was also, you know, thinking that we're going to get a win in Southern Miss. We didn't get that. I still see that 6 wins is very possible if this defense plays the way it plays, if the offense continues to improve. You know, by the end of the season, who knows what Southern Miss is going to look like, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech. The least winnable game to me is that Western Kentucky game at Bowling Green. I just think it's a bridge too far. But we'll see. We'll see. Concerning, I guess the counterpoint to this is that Seth Luttrell's only road victory was at Rice, which really wasn't a road game, considering that 35% of the crowd was North Texas fans, and Houston is still within the state. It's basically just a bus ride. I think they flew down there, but, you know, just an hour at the most. Army is in New York, West Point, New York. That's a trip. That's all the way on the East Coast. It's coming off a bye week, which is great for preparation for Army, but it's not so great considering that you lose some edge there. And this team, you know, has been criticized for losing its edge sometimes, not practicing well. And that's a concern for any college football team because they're college kids, but then also especially for North Texas. Army, then UTSA, those are obviously the two most important games coming up because they are the next games coming up. But it's a big stretch. I can see a 5-3 North Texas team by the end of October. And that's incredible to say, but then at the same time, a little bit expected. I don't know how I can balance those two feelings within myself. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm done talking today. I'm sure you're tired of listening to me jabber on in your ear, although you may like some North Texas talk. I know I do. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. Again, listen to the Deranged Penguin Podcast. This has been me, Adam Martinez. Go Mean Green.